Hey, what's up, guys? Welcome to another episode of The Tiger Table. And today, we're excited to do something a little special. We have David Meltzer broadcasting in from SoFi Stadium in Los Angeles. David Meltzer quickly rose to the top of the business world, becoming a millionaire. He co-founded the Sports One marketing agency and also formerly served as CEO of renowned Lee Steinberg Sports, which inspired the movie for Jerry Maguire. He's a three-time best-selling international author, the producer of Entrepreneur Number One's business show, and in his 30s, as a multimillionaire, he went on a rapid downward spiral that ended in bankruptcy, and he has since re-emerged to realize an even more rewarding and even more successful heights of his business and in life. I really do hope you enjoy today's episode as much as I did. Let's dive in. David Meltzer, thank you so much for being on the pod today, man. Really appreciate it.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Super excited to be here. You and I share so many similarities in our journey and what we read, how we act, and what we believe. There's no doubt that our intentions are aligned to provide a better life, to elevate others, to be happy.
Yeah, thank you, man. And so I heard something really interesting about you, and that at all times you like to, I guess, kind of touch on three notes. And you talk about that in life, there's teachers, there's coaches, and there's mentors, and you actually see them differently. Could you unpack that for us?
Sure. And I think people can be all three. We can't be equal in our strengths in all three. So a teacher is someone that can explain how to get to where you are. They're going to teach you the steps to take. A mentor is already where you want to be, and they show you the steps to take, but they may not be able to teach you how to take those steps. And a coach, to me, is the most exciting. It's the one that I find I'm best at. And a coach is someone that brings the best out of you. So if you wonder if Tiger Woods' coach knows more about golf than he does or is better at golf than he is, absolutely not. But Tiger Woods' coach in golf brings the best out of him. And I am on a journey to be a great teacher, a great mentor, but the best coach I can be by bringing the best out of people to enjoy the consistent every day, persistent without quit, pursuit of their own potential.
And I don't know if I'm quoting this right, but one of Tiger Woods' coaches was like famously quoted. He said that if you bring a student to me who's been playing golf, it'll take me 4 years to train them. And if you bring them to me and they have no experience playing golf, it'll take 2 years. Because he's like, I need 2 years to untrain them and then 2 years to train them again. How much do you believe, like, as an entrepreneur, as someone in business, like, how much we have to potentially untrain ourselves on things we've already learned?
Yeah, I look at it as unlearning, and especially with cultural changes and technology, how it changes so quickly, that we have to always be looking at not only what do we want to learn, but what do we want to unlearn? So many things that were acceptable 10 years ago aren't acceptable today as a culture. Many things today in business, for example, I will start out and help people by saying, how long 10 years ago do you think it took to get in touch with 1,000 people? The average answer is over a month. Wow. When I ask people that question today, how long does it take to get in touch with 1,000 people? Most people say under a minute. So if you don't think you have some things to unlearn in business, just on the size, scope, and scale of a community, of an addressable audience, of your own branding, for example, something you're an expert at, we're making a lot of mistakes. So I allot time every day to unlearn things, as well as what do I want to learn in order to be in the trajectory of where I want to be.
Is there something you're trying to unlearn at the moment?
Yeah. So for me, there's a lot of invisible assumptions. And so one of the things I want to unlearn is how technology can be utilized as a master. So I think we learn a lot of times that technology replaces things, and in itself, it masters things. And that comes from just the advent of certain technologies like the cell phone, which I lived through, a computer, which I lived through, some basic technologies where they certainly control aspects of our lives. And I want to unlearn the relationship I have to technology to be more of a servant, and to utilize my own emotion, my own personality to amplify with technology, but not to control or run or decipher or answer the questions that I have. And there's a lot of invisible assumptions that lay beneath technology of, you know, you hear people today, oh, you need it, in the future, the biggest differentiator will be AI. Well, not necessarily. I believe two other differentiators will be, number one, personal skills, because there'll be so many people I can hire to understand how to apply AI as a servant to whatever my pursuits are. But you can't hire someone to have your personality skills. And I think personality skills, it will be much more valuable than knowing how AI applies to what you do. And, you know, the third one's one that we share is reading. I think as we get more artificial and virtual, that those people that know how to read and read often will be able to decipher something that's really valuable. What's real and what's fake. And in order to determine what's real, people who practice reading are going to be exponentially superior in their capabilities to those that think that they don't need to read anymore because technology or chat or anything else will provide them the content they need.
Well, that's an interesting thought. And I think, like, you know, looking at the advent of AI and how it's impacting, I guess, people's behavior with like problem solving, like how much do you think, you know, reading can really help someone? Like if you think about the human mind and the human spirit and like what happens when you read a book, like what do you think that process is? And why do you think that's an advantage over just typing it in a prompt and getting an answer from the internet?
Well, I believe in co-creation. I know you and I have had discussions about woo-woo type of manifesting and some other philosophies that we have with energy and the energy of money. Reading allows us to co-create. It allows us to utilize the manifestation process and build a muscle or discipline about what's called materialization, monetization, or manifesting, to be able to take nothing, make it a probability by creating what it is in our mind, understanding who it can impact and who can help us with that impact, and then creating how to get it done. That process happens during reading. It's a co-creation process that you don't get by inputting or accessing information that already exists. And I think that a lot of people are going to lose the co-creative power that we've been given by the universe, or given biochemically, bioanatomically, in any type of ultimate universal technology that allows us to clear the interference between us and everything for everyone. I believe in a unified, abundant, infinite system of thought. So I want to utilize reading in order to effectuate that abundant, infinite, unified system of thought.
Yeah, there's a, I don't know if you've heard of him, but there's a guy, his name's Greg Braden. And he talks about how...
oh, I love Greg Braden.
Yeah, dude. I love his books. I love his content. And he talks about how the brain, over the period of, I think it's about... And they showed this on a, like a CT scan, like of neurons in the brain over the period of like, I think it's like 67 days or something like that. And you actually see through the person modifying their behavior and what they spend time on, their actual neurons start to rewire. And he explains it in the science, and I'm probably butchering this, but he's like, your mind and the neurons in your brain actually somewhat operate as like a frequency antenna. And it like can, you know what I mean? You know, when you walk in a room, you can pick someone's energy up just by feeling them and their presence. It's like, what energy are they vibrating on? And can you pick up on it? And there's actual science to back it up. And I think it's interesting that you talk about, you know, the book and the connective tissue, maybe to, you know, potentially the spiritual realm or something in the ether, right, that we can connect to. I agree with you. I feel like if you read a book, you're using that muscle in your mind and you're actually changing maybe your neural pathways. And then also it's like you talk about this where, you know, we're born with muscles in our ears and we don't use them. So then they just kind of like atrophy away, like throughout life. And maybe the concern there is people, if they're not using their brain the right way, if they're just externally getting the knowledge all the time, maybe they're not activating their internal power through reading that material themselves and trying to like build that muscle inside themselves. But like when it comes to energy, like what's your opinion on energy in business and how much has that made an impact on your success and how you've moved through the world through all the different eras of technology? Like how has energy served you in business?
Yeah, I think it's everything to me. And I believe everything is energy, and energy never stops. And it continues to hold three physics properties of it that can change our lives and set forth an amazing process or journey. And here's the three different characteristics of energy and why I, in business, it certainly appeals to me and in the concept of behavior and money. And so I specifically utilize my behavior and my relationship with money in an energetic perspective, utilizing the three characteristics of energy. First, energy, money, behavior, they attract more of the like kind of energy. It aggregates on itself. So the more money you have, the more money you'll get. The more money you give, the more money you get. It aggregates on itself. Good behaviors, and we can see this in working out. You know, when we first start working out, we dread working out. But eventually the opposite becomes true. We have to fight the desire to work out because we need rest. And so we actually, our behaviors are aggregating on itself, is the first characteristic that really can benefit us in business. Two, energy exponentially provides outcomes. So it's not one piece of energy equals one outcome, two will equal two, three will equal three. It's one equals one, two equals four, four equals eight, eight equals 16. And that's where the hockey stick of business occurs and the growth of a community occurs. Why your following's where it's at and mine's where it's at is two people that loved us and resonated with us energetically turned to four, four turned to eight, into 16, into 32, where right. Someone working without the perception of energy won't get the aggregate and the exponentiality. And then finally, to appease human nature, energy accelerates on itself. So in other words, in business, things happen faster. And the biggest obstacle to business is that human beings are not capable of understanding or knowing outcomes as they present themselves. Meaning in business, when we have good behavior and good relationship with money, we get good progress every day, but we can't understand it or know it. In fact, we can look at certain outcomes as being punishment or struggle or pain when it's actually promotion and protection because we're not capable of understanding or knowing what the outcome really means. It takes time. So if energy accelerates on itself, it speeds up the process that keeps us motivated and inspired, because a lot of people, the only reason they don't succeed is they quit because they don't have the capability of knowing or understanding outcomes. They don't have faith that good behavior creates good progress and bad behavior creates bad progress.
Yeah. And I agree with you on all of that. And I think, you know, one of my favorite quotes, and you probably know this one, is Albert Einstein said, "Everything is energy. And that's all there is to it. Match the frequency of that which you want, and you cannot help but have it." And he said that this is not philosophy, this is physics. Now, when you say all of this, and someone's maybe hearing this for the first time, it's quite a lot to download, right? How could someone get started in shifting their energy? Like how did you go from maybe not having your energy in a good place to shifting it to where it is now? Like, how could someone start that journey, start that process?
Yeah, they have to start it at a conscious level and then move to the subconscious and unconscious level of energy transformation or shifting of energy. So the first and most simple thing, and it's in my book, by the way, and I'm happy to send your entire community my book, even in Australia, I'll send it.
Yeah, we'll put it in the description. What's the book called?
Connected to Goodness, and it's david@dmeltzer.com. So email me, but here's what I talk about in the book. At a conscious level, the start of the transference or transformation, energy shifting, occurs by simply canceling negative thoughts or what you don't want. See, most people focus in on what they don't want, what they don't have, or what other people want for them. And then they end up with what they don't want, what they don't have, or what other people want from them. Worrying, for example, is a duplicative negative. Not only does it interfere with you getting what you want, it's a waste of emotion, but it actually is wishing for what you don't want. So if anyone ever had to take an exam and you're worried about a certain question on the exam, for example, when I was in law school, I was worried about the rules of perpetuity. And guess what? The first question on my test after worrying for days on days was the rules of perpetuity, first question on the test, every time. So what we learn to do is at a conscious level to start this process is just every time you have a negative thought, a negative word, a negative belief, a negative feeling, just say cancel. Just cancel it. Just stop the process of input. Do not allow it to get into the intermediate memory of our subconscious that hosts 40,000 of these thoughts that are repetitive and subconscious and automatic. And so the more proportionality that we have of the 40,000 thoughts that are aligned with the trajectory of where we want to be or better, the better off we're going to be, because it's those subconscious thoughts that create the neural pathways that make things easier. And it's the neural pathways that talk to the genetic and energetic inheritance that we have, the DNA, the hard drive that we have that create our flow, our frequency, our energy. So the first step in shifting your energy is a simple process I called cancel. And if you start with cancel, you'll then be able to clear your subconscious and connect to goodness, to God, to all of those great energetic, infinite, abundant, unified systems of thought that you are born with, and you're able to shift them to align with what you want to be or better. But it all starts by raising your awareness to, what am I doing to interfere with my potential? What am I saying to interfere? What am I thinking to interfere? What am I believing to interfere? And what am I feeling that interferes with where I want to be or better? And the easiest and best way to start is to either inside or outside verbalize cancel. So, you know, if I say, oh, I'm going to be late for my plane, my kids joke, right? Cancel, right? Whatever it is, you can hear me always say, or if someone says something negative to me, my response is cancel. Like, I don't want that in my system, bro. Just cancel it. It doesn't exist. It's not getting into the cellular memory to start talking to my subconscious. So I'm only talking, thinking, saying, doing, believing, and feeling towards what I want, not interfering with what I want.
And I think it's powerful. Like, you know, like oftentimes we're running that unconscious program, you know, and I like to think of it like a computer program. We're running code. You can't always see the code in the background. You can just see the conscious like text on the screen, but like, how deep is that code, you know? And I think it does start with that input of being conscious about like the things we say, right? Like, I used to say something when I was a kid, and I used to say like, I hate reading, you know? Yeah. And someone one time said to me, they said, Dane, when did you decide you hated reading? I was like, what do you mean, when did I decide? It was a great question. And they're like, when did you decide you hated reading? I was like, well, probably in the second grade when a teacher said X, Y, Z. And I was like, holy crap, there's this code running in my mind from grade two from a teacher. And I was like, now it's conscious. Holy crap. And then I decided, well, maybe I actually do like reading. And then I started reading from that point. Now I have a library. But like, isn't it weird? Like, those little things that might not seem like a big deal can play such a substantial role in our mindset and bleed out into real life.
Let me give you another example. So I grew up with a single mom, six kids. And so my grandmother would take care of us because my mom would work two jobs. And my grandma, I was super hyperactive, surprise. And I would tell my grandma, I'm bored. You know, I'm a 3 or 4 year old. Grandma, I'm bored. And she would say, only stupid people get bored. Smart people think of things to do. Whoa. And I heard this all the time. And although I got good grades, my siblings were exceptional students, Harvard, Penn, Columbia, summa cum laude, Ivy Leaguers in America. And I had programmed, right? I had programmed myself that I was stupid. So when I started building businesses, I always hired people less than me because I was afraid of being exposed that I was stupid. Because my grandma had inputted into me all those times, stupid people get bored, and I got bored all the time. Ironically, not because I was stupid. I was more like Einstein. I got bored all the time because I was way above what people were talking about, and it bored me. I wanted something stimulating. I want something challenging. And so I create other challenges for myself that spiraled me later on in life to finally be at ease with who I am, who I may be, and what I may become.
Yeah. And I think there's so much truth in that. Like, it's, you know, we can carry these things into adulthood from childhood, you know, just that random thing, you know, your grandmother said to you, in frequent occasion. It's like, yeah, even auditing, like, who's putting code into my life, and I should be consciously canceling it. Like you said, I like that. I'm going to start using that. I'm sure it might be abrasive in some situations.
People that feed you. Yeah, but surround yourself with people that feed you, right? So many people surround themselves that people would bleed them. You know, even in business, 80% of the people that are in a business would most likely bankrupt you. It's the 20% that make you money. 80% of the people are breaking you even or losing money for you. 80% of the people that we surround ourselves, we don't realize how toxic they are and how much they bleed us. And we want to be super aware of those that feed us so we can feed them. Surrounding ourselves with the right people and the right idea are the fastest way to get to where we want to be, guaranteed.
Wow. So early on in your career, you talk about you had a nice run on the board in 1992, I believe it was, in the technology space. Before that happened, had someone inspired you, or had someone kind of represented a character to you that that you looked up to, or that you drew inspiration from? Did you try to model after any other people that you looked up to?
You know, for me, it was Warren Buffett. You know, for me, he was a rich guy, a successful person, and I wanted to be rich. I wanted to buy my mom a house. And so my values, I live with such a loving mom, and so extraordinary siblings and a great family. The only time I had pain in my life was when there was financial stress. The car broke down, there wasn't enough food. And so I equated my happiness to money would buy me happiness that was missing. And so the richest people on earth, Warren Buffett at the time, was someone that I looked up to because I wanted to be rich. And so I made all of my career choices early on by who would pay me the most. You're talking about a kid that is second year in law school when the economy was in a recession. There was no jobs for lawyers. I was $100,000 in debt because I had to take law loans, that I literally prayed to God and said, "Hey, if you give me a job that will pay off my law loans and buy my mom a house, I'll shovel shit with my hands 6 days a week, 12 hours a day in order to get that." And I've never lost that perspective because money was going to be my release. It was going to be the final possession that would allow me to be fulfilled and happy. Ironically, I was wrong. You know, money doesn't buy love or happiness. It allows me to shop, and I had to learn that I needed to learn to shop for the right things for the right reasons. Then you can be happy. I'm all for making a lot of money. You know, might know my motto is to make a lot of money first so you can help a lot of people and have a lot of fun. I believe the more money you give, the more you'll receive. But I think everyone's missing the first part. They're not teaching it, that the more money you make, the more money you can give, and the more money you'll receive. And so we're forgetting the first part. You know, you can have all the great intentions to give everything away, but if you're not giving anything away, you're not going to receive very much either.
Yeah. And, I think the lights might have.
Yeah, the lights went out. Hold on. Sorry.
That's okay,
I
man.
Blew out the stadium lights. Yeah, we'll edit it.
That was such a good mic drop. We blew out the lights.
That was good.
Well, you timed it perfectly as you wrap that up so we can edit this out.
Yeah, that's Justin.
I got a call from Thursday. We're talking.
All right, on.
Hey, what's up, Justin? Hey, we're excited to catch up, man. Okay, so
they forgot
so
to pay the bill at the stadium.
Okay, I gotta ask you, man. Why, and how are you in the SoFi Stadium? I gotta understand why you have access to this place. And
so I lost everything because I personally guaranteed a bunch of stuff in 2008 and had over $100 million down to zero. I was presented with the opportunity by the Jones business called Legends here in America. They were building this new stadium and they wanted an anchor tenant, and they offered me a 10-year lease to have my podcast studio, my training center, suites to all the concerts, games, events at the stadium. And for that 10-year lease, I would then help market the stadium, the licenses, the seats, et cetera, and have my office in the stadium. And I took a big risk. I had to pay a year up front. And I will tell you, the closest I've been to divorce since I lost everything was when COVID hit. And my wife told me, "Hey, you got to get our money back. You know, I'm really, the stadium wasn't open yet. It was COVID." And that's when I broke it to her that I personally guaranteed the lease And I promised her that it would work out. And it's been the best business decision of my life to have my offices here, my studio, my training and masterminds, to have the concerts and the games. It's an amazing profit center as well as experience for everyone involved.
Yeah. And I think, you know, shout out to SoFi Stadium, like what an incredible position to be in, right? Like one could not plan to have that happen. Right.
No.
So something I'm starting to really get into lately is what I call taprooting. And taprooting is essentially like one door will always lead to another door. Right. So like, for example, if you met Lee Steinberg, right. And then it's like, well, who does he know? And if you go to him and you, let's just say you do some solid favors for Lee, then all of a sudden you ask Lee for a favor, you ask for help. Like, you know, obviously there's that mutual agreement here. So like, how much do you think in business people should be deploying this more? Because I actually see this as quite a rare thing. Like it's pretty rare for someone who's a new entrepreneur to like, look at their network and go, how do I give value to these people? Because you might think to yourself, well, what do I have to give? But like, what's the power of like networking through exchanging value to others, even though you might feel like you might not have much to give?
Yeah, well, first you have to shift your paradigm from a zero sum game of trade and negotiation into a value add game of abundance. Okay. And then you have to understand value itself. You see, what made my career so different is I had a different perspective of value, and everything I do is about value. When I realized simply there's two ways to provide value, therefore everyone can provide value regardless of what you consider your personal or professional stature. So to provide value is one, to give people more of what they like, or two, take away some, if not all, of what they don't like. That's the only two ways you can provide value. So yeah. If we're more interested than interesting, and we take any subject matter or topic, and we are more interested and ask, hey, what are you doing today about solar, about stadium seating? What are you doing today about the weather? What are you doing today about travel? What are you doing today about fitness, about your nutrition? What are you doing today? What do you like about it? And find out what someone likes, and then say, what don't you like about it? Then I can ask two questions. One, would it help you if? And then I can determine if I can provide value or not. Or two, if I can't provide value, hey, do you know anyone that can help me provide that value? So in building my community of people that want to help each other and know people that can help each other, in building that community for a lifetime, I'm building people that do two things, buy from me and sell for me, whether it's my product, service, solution, or brand, or whether it's my ideas, or just my enthusiasm, they're buying from me and selling for me for life. And nothing will grow your success, fulfillment, passion, purpose, and profitability than having a community of people for a lifetime that are buying from you and selling for you, a community of people that are trying to help each other and know people that can help each other. And it's all derived by a simple formula: is the only way I can provide value is to give someone more of what they like and take away some, if not all, of what they don't like. So if they like Rocky Road ice cream, I can provide value to them. And then I can ask them, hey, do you know anyone that can help me? I'm looking for an internship, a job. All because I found out the person liked Rocky Road ice cream and I gave them more of what they like. And I'm telling you, if you look at, for example, in entertainment and in sports, a lot of very successful business people understood this. So they were, you know, the trainer or the nanny. Why do you think so many trainers and nannies get funded by the wealthy person that, you know, who am I? I'm just a trainer. I'm just an nanny. No, you're providing value that's very significant. One person's providing value of health. The other person is value is taking care of their kids.
Yeah.
Because of the relationship of value, they now can say, hey, I'm starting a business. Can you give me a couple $1 million? I've been taking care of your kids for 10 years. Or, you know, hey, LeBron, I've been, you know, hooking you up with all this stuff. Let's start, you know, a company together. I'm Maverick, your high school buddy. Maverick's a billionaire now because he was able to provide value to his friend, not just milk his friend, but he knew what LeBron liked and what he didn't like. And he does that. I can teach anyone in a very short amount of time to build a community of people that will buy from you and sell for you, no matter what you do, what your skills are, your knowledge are, or your desire.
So if you were to say, like if you were to strip away everything you have now, like your network, everything you've got going on, like what is maybe a handful of things someone that maybe is working a full-time job, maybe they're in debt, maybe they really don't have a lot going on for them. Like, how do they start to step into the stratosphere of entrepreneurship? Like, what are some initial things you might be able to do to start mingling with those circles? Do you have any ideas of where someone could kind of go from zero to one in that situation?
Yeah, from zero to one, what I would do is, because people are so accessible, I would do research. I'd pay attention and give my intention to finding people that are sitting in a situation I want to be in. And then I'd find out where they were and I'd ask them for help in person, on the phone, via email or media, traditional or social. I would ask them for help. I would be more interested than interesting. I'd utilize open-ended questions to say, hey, what are you doing today for this? What do you like about it? What don't you like about it? Would it help you if, and do you know anyone that could help me? And the more people I found that sat in the situation that I want to be in, because the two ways to get to where you want to be, if you have no network, no money, is simply find someone who sits in the situation you want to be in and ask them for help, and then find other people that you can help. Those are the two ways to get to where you want to be. And so I would specifically, with complete attention and intention, do say, think, believe, and feel all the things that I wanted. See, there's a mathematical formula to doing this. It's pay attention to what you want, give it your intention, do say, think, feel, and believe what you want, and it will equal the coincidence of what you want or better. Attention plus intention equals coincidence, luck, karma. It's a mathematical equation that always effectuates itself. People just complicate it by utilizing fear to motivate and inspire instead of identifying the fear and relieving it and going directly to the source of abundance by finding someone that's sitting in the situation they're in and finding others who need to help and help them both in order to create that community of people, helping each other and knowing people that will help each other.
I think that's a powerful concept, right? Like you talk about learning to utilize fear and doing it with what you call ego-based consciousness. So let's just say someone's in the situation where they're like, okay, these people are in a position I want to be in. I need to then go ask for help. But then a lot of people are like, I don't want to ask for help, or who am I? And the imposter syndrome kicks in, fear kicks in, overwhelm kicks in. So how does someone learn to utilize their fear? How could someone, I guess, start to adopt that mentality? Yeah.
Well, I help people the practice of identifying fear. Also, again, by simplifying fear. There's only two types of fear, just like there's two ways to provide value. There's fear of the past or fear of the future. So when I feel afraid, I feel imposter syndrome or angry, separate, inferior, superior, resentful, guilty, worried, anxious, angry, any of these feelings that are fear-based, I ask myself, what is it in my past that makes me feel this way? Or what is about the future that makes me feel this way? And then instead of trying to logic it, go over and under it, through it, around it, deny it, supply it, I don't resist it. I simply, when I identify fear of the past or fear of the future, I just stop. I stop. I don't try to resist it. I breathe through my nose, out through my mouth. And what I do is I recollect myself with my faith. There's something bigger than me, an omniscient, all-powerful source that's protecting and promoting me, not punishing me. I remember, and recollect my faith that there's an omniscient, all-powerful, all-knowing source that loves me, protects me, and promotes me. I'm part of an infinite, abundant, unified system of thought. Why am I interfering with it? Because of past meanings of going bankrupt, past meanings of my wife leaving me, past meanings of, you know, my grandma calling me stupid, or some limitation of my own self-image of the future that I'm not worthy because I'll never overachieve my own self-image. So instead, I am now part and parcel of the omniscient, all-powerful. Therefore, I'm going to roll in the right direction of where I want to be or better. So in other words, when fear is present, your mind, your body, and your soul are on fire. Everybody knows when you're on fire, stop, drop, and roll.
I absolutely love that. And you know, a direct quote from you, you said that if you want unbelievable, start with impossible.
Yeah.
So
it's self-image. That's it. Don't limit yourself.
Yeah. And so one of your goals, let's just say, like, you know, someone would hear this and maybe say, well, David, that's an audacious goal. You know what I mean? But you got to have those. And it's empowering over 1 billion people to be happy. So when you say happy, like what do you think happiness is?
Well, it's giving them the ability to enjoy the consistent everyday, persistent without quit, pursuit of their potential. Now, the three things that I teach people or empower them with that I believe create this enjoyment is, one, living in abundance, making a lot of money, living in the world of more than enough. Two, helping people. And three, having fun doing it. Because I've never met anyone, and I probably have met more people than most people on earth. I've never met anyone that lives in abundance, that makes a lot of money, helps a lot of people, and has a lot of fun that isn't happy.
So in this, let's just say in this situation, someone's yet to be in abundance, right? Like, if you trail back to when, you know, you lost everything. And one of the things your wife said to you in that situation was like, you got to take stock of yourself. Like, let's just say things aren't great. How does someone find happiness where perhaps there's nothing external that's going on in a great way for them?
Yeah. Well, I use time in order to effectuate my perspective of happiness, to see what am I doing to participate in that happiness or a perception of happiness. And the first thing is start day by day, knowing what you want, who you can help, who can help you, and how to get it done, and prioritize by what's important to you just for that day. And then when you decide today what's important to me in a trajectory of where I think, I'll repeat, where I think I want to be or better, I then can align the meaning of my past into promotion and protection. I can align the meaning of my past to provide me the light, the love, and the lessons to get me where to I want to be or better, by effectuating it with the activities of today aligned with that trajectory as well. When we understand that the past is infinite and the meaning of the past is the only limitation, the future is infinite and my limitation is only my self-image, then I can go ahead and narrow my activities into the present, the 24 hours that we're almost guaranteed, to be productive, to be accessible, and to be gracious with that time that I'm given each day, without wasting time, energy, emotion, and money by interfering with those activities that are going to get me to where I want to be or better, instead of accelerating in the wrong trajectory, creating void, shortages, obstacles, and resistance to what we want. In other words, when we know our what, our who, our how, and our now, we can apply our why by knowing, regardless of our past, I am blank. I am happy. I am healthy. I am wealthy. I am worthy. And start focusing on what we're doing to interfere with it in the realm of abundance, regardless of the struggles, the pain, the setbacks, the failures, the mistakes of the past. Those are just meanings, light, love, and lessons to get me to a better place, a better position, or put me in a better situation.
Yeah. And I think, like, you know, it's so important to project yourself forward, right? A lot of people are looking in the rearview mirror too much and not thinking about, like, the next, right? So, dude, for you, like, what's something that you're just obsessed with at the moment that maybe isn't public knowledge or maybe people don't know about that's very forward thinking for you?
Forgiveness. I know it sounds obtuse, but I'm obsessed with understanding forgiveness. I think where we are in the world, that there's a simple solution that's generational, historical, and reconciled with human nature. It's the simplicity and the power of forgiveness. And I'm not just saying overall with the atrocities of world peace and forgiving generational hate, but I'm talking about as individuals looking in the mirror and utilizing forgiveness as a weapon or a tool to peace and ease for you. It starts with you. And if you can live with forgiveness of self, you can give what you have. You can't give what you don't have. So the more gratitude you have aligned with forgiveness and understanding how powerful forgiveness is. So I'm studying the Course in Miracles. I'm studying all types of, believe it or not, biographies of Einstein, of how forgiveness is interrelated into applied mathematics and physics, believe it or not.
Wait,
to
what?
Understand. Yeah. So forgiveness is in applied mathematics and physics. When you think about the universe as Einstein has, you'll see that the universe is in a flow or an ease, in a multidimensional metaphysical presence, that forgiveness actually is a tool in physics to provide the flow, the ease, the abundance, the infinite. And without forgiveness, there'll be this interference. Mm. See, forgiveness is the solution or the cure to fear. You can't be afraid if you're forgiving and grateful. There's nothing to be afraid of. If you're forgiving, when you're in a state of forgiveness, a mindset of forgiveness, there's no interference. And now you are receiving so much more and so much more at ease in the flow. You're utilizing, harmonizing with the metaphysics, quantum physics, and physics of the universe.
Yeah, like it, so like for you, it's almost like looking at, and I get this, right? Like I'm going through a similar journey where I'm finding forgiveness for my mother, forgiveness for my father, forgiveness of people that, like, you know, did horrific things to me when I was younger. It's almost like there's a static frequency, like constantly, like getting in the way of like making good decisions, or it's like this it, like, weighs you down. I agree with you. And have you found that, like, it's a recent thing for you to kind of go through this journey and have this revelation, or is it something you've been unconsciously doing for a while? How's it helped you?
I think the only, you know, I've been dealing with it for a while just because how interrelated it is to gratitude. And I've been for 17 years in the practice of gratitude, in the study of gratitude, but have just recently seen the significance, like you've just described, of how important the complementary co-host of my life, forgiveness, is to gratitude. And so I'll continue the effort. And I think what helped was understanding the atrocities in the world and how, you know, the generational hate that will reoccur if we don't start planting seeds under trees that we may never sit under, with the seeds of forgiveness, not of revenge and blame, shame, and justification. I got time for one more question, my buddy. They're playing the music behind me.
Dude, let's end it on that beautiful note. And I think, you know, you're a wonderful, beautiful individual with a big heart, and you truly love people, and you do a lot for a lot of people I know, and they talk about you fondly. So how could someone reach out to you? How can they connect with you? How can they jump on your programs? Where would you like to direct people that are interested in knowing more?
Thank you, buddy. Email me directly. I do receive all my emails, david@dmeltzer.com. And if you forget my email, just remember my name, David Meltzer, because if you Google or search for me, you're going to find me everywhere. David Meltzer, a blessing. Like I said, I'll provide your community my books, my guides, my exercises for free. Just email me or Google me, DM me. We got to do more content together. We're brothers from another mother,
hey,
from all the way across on the other side of the world. Dane, my man, thank you for having me.
Big love, man. Thank you so much. And I'd like to chat to you again, man. I'd like to know how I could take some pain out of your life or add something good to your life. Thank you so much, brother. Speak to you soon.